Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Is he here? Is he here? I'm here, Paul. How are you?
Why were you late today?
It's Hillary's fault.
Oh, that's her fault, right?
Right? I mean, Hillary gets blamed for everything, right? So I'm just going to blame Hillary. What the heck kind of week have we had?
I don't even know where to start. Let's start with Melania Trump, this beautiful model who seems to me like just sort of the classic trophy wife. And suddenly they want her to be seen as a serious first lady. And even with her charming accent, you know, I thought she did actually a very beautiful job reading this speech.
Right.
Except the speech turned out to be Michelle Obama's.
Well, you know, okay, I'm going to cut her a little slack, okay? But let me just say this, right? It's a crazy world out there, okay? I mean, I got accosted by a Pokemon walking through the lobby of this building this week.
Well, right? That's another crazy thing. Pokemon Go is going everywhere, and somebody came in all excited, one of our guests, and said, "Oh, you've got a Pokemon hiding in your lobby downstairs."
I don't know. I don't want to know where your Pokemon is.
That's where my Pokemon is.
So it's a crazy week. It's just that kind of a nuts week, and I do want to cut her a little slack, right? Everybody knows, I'll be the first to admit, okay, that whenever you are going to sit there and on the national platform, a national arena, and you're going to speak, right, you usually have people that are helping you write your speech.
Of course. They probably write it for you.
Right. The goofiest thing on the planet is to say, "I wrote it myself," okay? Yeah. But that's where we start with this problem. I'm going to come out right out of the bat and say, look, I'm probably not going to vote for either of the two main candidates.
Really? You think so?
Yes.
Probably?
This is
the old Bernie supporter?
Yes, yeah. This is the old Bernie supporter. But I will tell people again, right, that I've always been a non-party preference.
Right.
So for either party to somehow feel that they have my vote in the bank, and that me basically not voting for their candidate is withdrawing my vote from their proposed bank,
right,
okay, is a fallacy.
So there isn't just one letter you look at on the ballot.
No, but the reason why I'm bringing that up is because you got people that are basically saying, okay, that you're either with us or you're against us.
Well,
last time I heard you're either with us or against us was when we basically were about to go to war.
Yeah,
to a war that was a misguided war that basically everybody admits today, other than I think the current nominee for vice president of the Republican Party.
I'm thinking of another war 100 years ago called the Civil War.
Well,
it has that feel to it.
And you know what? You're right. There was probably you're either with us or against us happening, right?
Yeah.
Across the line. So we have this, you're either with us or against us. How can we have a United States when you have sides of an equation that's you're either in this camp or you're in that camp? You're either in camp whatever it is. You know, what was the deal with it? With the Twilight movies? You're either camp whatever or like team whatever or
right.
Team whatever. Okay, so
I'm in Camp Snoopy.
You're in Camp Snoopy?
That's right.
Oh, my God. Showing your age again, right? So here's the thing. Today, it might be a little bit of an interesting show, right? Because we actually, every once in a while, our guests say we do it anyway when they're in the room, right?
That's right.
We want to just riff. Okay,
riff.
And I'm doing a live feed on Facebook right now, so if anybody's on my friends list, look us up, and you can basically just tap into it. You have to be a friend to see me basically make a fool of myself on
That's
here.
That's right.
Right? And I'll turn the camera in a few minutes, and I'll introduce everybody to Paul in case nobody's seen him. He's all looking very nappy.
Biffy, you're
biffy today, right?
I think
you're
biffy.
No, I think biffy with this outfit, definitely biffy, right? But we'd want to do open mics every once in a while.
Sure.
And this is one of them. As crazy as the week has been, then the circus continues with the one convention currently underway. I'm sure it will continue next week in the other convention, right?
Yeah.
We live in a world where, you know, 7.2 billion dollars is made in Nintendo in less than 48 hours upon the release of Pokemon Go,
mm-hmm.
right? And I will admit, I'm playing it. okay? Because I don't want to be left out and not know how to talk to my nephews that are playing it, right?
Yeah, right. We'll go downstairs. There's a Pokemon.
Right. I download it, and I go, hey, I'm a hip uncle. Look, I'm playing this thing. He goes, oh, yeah, how many Pokemon do you have? I
and
said, I have four. He goes, oh, we're already at 22.
There's also a, what do they call it, a gym or something, or a school, or what are they where the two groups fight, the red and the
blue? Yeah, yeah, there's training centers.
Yeah, there's a training center right around the
corner. Now, I will tell you what's interesting about this, okay, is in this crazy topsy-turvy,
bizarre ass war
that we have, right? Well, we did have a cute-ass underwear model speaker at the convention, right? Now, he might have been a dumbass, but he was a cute dumbass, right?
If you say so.
Okay. Enough politics. It's a crazy world, right?
Well, but I'll leave one thing in politics. The crazy thing about Melania Trump is not that they made a mistake, but that it just shows, again, the amateur nature of their whole campaign, that they don't.
But how can you operate at this level with amateur hour?
You can't. They have no staff. They have amateurs. They're doing this. You've never written this before. We should send them the, you know, speech writing for dummies book.
So easy for it to just basically go away in 2 seconds flat, just accept the fact and say publicly, hey, I'm a human being. I'm fallible. I made a mistake.
They finally
You're
did
right.
Today.
You know, yeah. We did. They finally did after 48 hours.
Yeah, 48 hours. For 48 hours, they pretended it wasn't a story.
In a how-many-day convention?
4-day conference.
So half the period of the convention was overshadowed by a stupid thing that could have gone away in 5 minutes.
The speechwriter came out. She's a personal friend of the family. She's worked on some of his books before. And her claim to fame is she's a former ballet dancer. This isn't a famous writer. This is somebody that they befriended, and somehow she took to writing books.
So here's the thing, people, and why I will go back to why I probably will not be voting for either one of those two candidates. Mm-hmm. First of all, I will never again vote for the least of the evils, because that in itself is a self-fulfilling prophecy, my opinion, understandably, of where we never get out of that cycle. Mm-hmm. If we continue to basically...
Because there's always somebody worse.
but what I'm saying is I grew up in countries where I did not have the right to vote.
Right.
For me to come here and to basically be told, well, you really don't have a choice. You have the right to vote, but you don't really have a choice to make. You get to choose between the two main parties that, and I've said it to a lot of my friends, in my book are basically all feeding at the free buffet at the same country club wearing two different colors of jerseys.
Yeah. Well,
period.
You do get to choose. You get to pick. Do you want to poke your left eye out or your right eye out?
Well, you know what they do when everybody has an eye for an eye, right?
Yeah.
When you're either with us or against us. Everybody
well,
goes
the, on one of the talk shows last night. The one of the I think he's the editor of the National Review, which is a
by the way, if anybody is watching us on live, I'm just curious because on the audio you can hear both Paul and I pretty well. We know that.
Right.
Would you just text me or let me know if you're watching? I know there's about 8 or 9 people watching currently. Come on, let's get the numbers up
a little bit,
right? But would you let us know if you can actually hear Paul as well when he talks?
Probably not. Not very well.
Just give me a whole bunch of, like, you know, I don't know, like love
thumbs
or kisses
or
thumbs up or something. If you can hear
smiley faces, yeah.
Okay. So what is your thought?
The guy from the National Review, which is a very conservative paper.
Thanks, Liz.
Which has been against Trump from the beginning, said, you know, this is, just what she said, it's a race to the bottom. It's not an aspirational election. Instead, it's all about who do you hate the least. Or who do you hate the most? Maybe that's a better way to put it. And he said, the problem with Trump is he represents everything we hate about reality television, and Hillary seems to represent everything we hate about politicians in general.
Right. And if this is the world that we are supposed to basically accept that we live in,
mm-hmm.
well, guess what? When it comes to November and I go up there to vote, I have a choice of saying, no, I will not play by these stupid rules that don't work anymore.
Would you vote for Dr. Jill Stein from the Green Party or former governor of New Mexico, Gary Johnson?
You know what?
The Libertarian Party?
I'll be honest. I have not done, and I always prided myself on being at least an informed voter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Because there are two other candidates
and
who will
appear
in all the ballots.
And here's why I think... And I'm not knocking anybody that doesn't do this, but I came from places where we did not have this ability to, this right to do,
mm-hmm.
this responsibility to do.
Responsibility is a key word.
And if you have that opportunity to do this, it behooves you, and it is your responsibility to also educate yourself. That means to do it with an open mind and look at all your options that are on the table, because what is at stake is not just the nation, but how we are perceived internally, externally, what gets put into motion. That, you know, these things don't happen all in a 4-year bracket. I mean, in a way, the candidates that you mentioned for the both Libertarian and for the Green Party are candidates that I have not really looked into.
Nobody has.
Right? But between now and November,
never look at any of the
but between now and November, and sooner rather than later, I will tell you this, I will be looking at them.
Yeah. Okay. You do have two other choices, and this is, you say I have no choice but one or two. You actually do have two other choices, but we tend to think, well, not really.
And you have a write-in choice.
You always have a write-in, right. Although that's difficult, I think, in these.
Although, but you know what? You know how many people I have talked to that are registered both parties and that are also from, quote-unquote, my camp, the non-party preference, right? Mm-hmm. How many people in the last 10 days that I've talked to that have basically said, I wish we could start a campaign, a social media campaign, where we would actually just float a name, whatever, mm-hmm. Peter Rabbit, whatever, and that the vote, write-in vote, would be a dissent vote to send a message that we are sick and tired and we're not going to take it anymore.
You have that ability. You have Dr. Jill Stein or you have Gary Johnson. There you have two other names that will appear on the ballot, and you can vote for either one, either because you think they're better than the main party candidates or because you want to protest.
Right. And you can do that. And for people who say, no, you know, if you vote for you don't vote for Hillary, then it's a shoo-in that, you know, you're basically voting for Trump. No, people, that's not how it works, okay? My vote is for who I choose to vote for. I'm not voting for somebody because they're not the other person. Those days are over. Now, I'm 52 years old. Maybe it's an age thing, but I'm done with that. I looked back, and I don't think I've ever voted for anybody on those terms. I never voted as a negative vote against somebody else for somebody, okay? That person needs to earn my vote. Now, between now and November, and I've said it to people, I'm open to Hillary if you want me to vote for Hillary. Same thing with Donald Trump. But that vote has to be earned. Show me why I should vote for you because you're not Hillary or because you're not Donald.
And last night, there were several commentators, mostly on MSNBC, were talking about the negative tone of the couple of days, that there really was no positive platform put forth. It was all about how much they hate Hillary, and it was not about here's what we're going to do instead. And this guy from the Review and a couple others came out and said, well, that's just the way it's going to work. And trust me, it's going to work that way next week. Hillary's going to talk less about what she's going to do and more about how we should be afraid of Donald Trump.
And here's what we have the right to do, to send a message.
No, we don't. That's un-American. You've got to vote Democratic or Republican.
Send a message that basically says, I'm not doing that.
Gary Johnson, the a socially liberal, it's hard to believe there was such a thing once, that's what I consider myself to be, socially liberal Republican, Republican. There is no such thing left anymore here. And he does smoke a little marijuana, and he does believe in gay marriage, and he's very socially liberal, and he was a very popular governor in New Mexico, elected twice. His vice presidential pick is another former Republican, moderate Republican governor, William Weld from Massachusetts, who was similarly elected twice, both of whom have left the Republican Party, embraced the Libertarian Party because they claim that they reflect what most of America is, which is socially liberal and fiscally conservative. That's where I am. I don't want the government to waste money and to spend like a drunken sailor, but I don't care who marries who.
Right, and I think in that aspect, I believe the same way. I think a lot of people are socially liberal,
right,
fiscally conservative.
And if that's true, then you should take a look at the Libertarian Party because that's their platform. That's the two people. That's their stated position.
Where they lose me is where we get a little extreme. We get a little bit too much. And it was earlier when it was a lot more Tea Party, a lot more, you know, sort of, you know, there was a bit more nationalist party buried into the Libertarian Party, and I think a lot of that has now been absorbed by the Republican Party.
I don't know if it's ever been. I challenge that. I think it was just an anti-government party, so they wanted to abolish everything in the government. Libertarians historically have had a trouble if we're for individual liberty and we think government has a very limited function. how limited is limited? How much government should we have? And some go all the way to anarchy, no government. And that's always been the problem. They don't know where to, within themselves, they don't know where to draw the line. How much government is acceptable?
Well, you know what? It's really cool. I appreciate you guys that are listening. I'm going to give a shout out to my friend Liz Terry and Tyler Clegg. I'm going to give out the number, Tyler, here in a minute, and you guys can call in. Also, Liz, that's a good question. She says the aging of the baby boomers means that liberalism is in retreat, and we need to re-energize it somehow. Education is needed. I think education is always needed, and I think that aspect of it is cross-generational and should always be taking place. We should always be looking at people, vetting people, educating people, reminding people what this country is really built on.
So can I remind you what this country was really built on?
Let me just give out the number, okay? Right. Because this is an open mic Wednesday, and if anybody wants to call in, please call us on 949-330-7761. If you're on the West Coast, we are going to be on the air for another probably half an hour or so. So there's plenty of time. Call in, say hi. If you listen to the show, I'd love to hear your feedback on things before. And Paul?
All Republicans love to refer to the Founding Fathers, and we should go back to the original intent of the Founding Fathers, right?
Mm-hmm.
The original intent was to be radical and liberal. They grew up in a monarchy system. And so this whole idea of saying that the monarchy, the king, was not handed to you by God.
Right.
Up until that point, for hundreds of years, whoever the king was, that's who God gave you to rule. And they came along and said, no, God gave us certain rights. God did not give us a king. We have the right to pick our own leader. And that was radical. And in fact, was called liberal. The conservative position was stick with the king.
Right.
So the conservatives who want to go back to the original intent should, by definition, be radical liberals and not conservatives.
Well, there's a reason why they called it the American Revolution.
Yeah, right. This was not a conservative movement. This was a radical liberal movement where they were going to take a more liberal view of society than the historical monarchy king down controlled system.
And that's the one issue I had during the primaries where, and I'm sorry, but, you know, where certain members of the Democratic Party candidates' camp were actually very mean and malicious to somebody else who was running. And basically there was this an assumption of coronation, right, from day one.
That's right. Again, right? Back to the regal nature.
So I'm sorry. You're talking about it being radical. Okay, maybe it's the anarchist in me. There's a little anarchist DNA in me. I'm not going to be told. You can ask my mother. Anybody can also ask my mother. Will Rod
get
do
your mother on
what
today.
What you tell? Yeah, Mom, if you're listening, call in, right? But my wife can even call in, and she'll tell you that anybody who knows me knows that the first way to get me to basically absolutely not do what you want is to tell me what to do.
I see. So you're contrarian. If I say do it, you won't.
Well, no.
I have to use reverse psychology and say, don't you do, don't
no,
you
that
show
doesn't
up
work
on time. Don't you show up on time next time.
But no, I mean, look, whether it's religion, and I'm sorry, maybe this will upset some people, but whether it's religion, whether it's politics, whether it's the way you live your life,
mm-hmm.
I think the ability to question, to engage, to explore, right, is something that we are given that we as a gift, and we should never basically just not use it.
Let me give you another crazy example of what happened this week to me, and I think this really, for me, brought home the whole thing in a very personal way. My little grandson's two. He loves to go down to the train station in Santa Ana or elsewhere, and we watch the trains go by. So, like I always do, Friday night I picked him up. I take him down to the train station. Everybody gets on board except one remaining passenger, who happens to be African-American, or, as we used to say, black.
Okay.
I'm white, he's black. He's young, I'm old. He has wild, crazy reggae hair, I don't.
Okay.
And immediately, when the train left the station, I'm there with my little grandson. I looked at him, he looked at, or the young boy looked at me, I looked at him. And you know what? We both saw fear. He looked at me like, oh, my God, this guy's going to call the cops. And I looked at him like, oh, my God, I'm going to get mugged and my little grandson's going to get hurt. And I was so ashamed of that feeling that I walked over. I said, no, wait a minute. I'm not going to buy into this. Where did I? This is how I grew up in the 60s in Detroit where we had riots and stuff.
Right.
And I walked over to him and I literally said, hey, are you, taking the next train or whatever, something? Did you miss your train? And it turned out he had. Part of the reason he was so scared is he'd never been on a train. He had missed his train. And so I helped him figure out where the next train was, and we stopped the next conductor in the train, and he looked it up and found out it wasn't for a couple hours where he was going. And I thought, but if I had just let it be, with all the stuff going on, all the cops shooting, all the police,
Black Lives Matter,
shooting,
Blue Lives Matter,
which all that stuff floating around here. And I thought, well, that's where we're headed back to. And then Donald Trump, where the law and order candidate, which is what I grew up, every Republican from Nixon before used to say, George Bush Sr. used to say, the Willie Horton ad, that's what he ran against Dukakis, because Dukakis let this guy out, had a weekend parole program, and this guy went out and killed somebody. We're stoking this sort of racial fear again, where we're going to be afraid of each other. I said, I ain't buying it.
Well, you say it all the time, right? This medium that maybe today is a little bit off, but this medium that we have here, you call it streaming
not
radio,
screaming.
Not screaming radio.
Right.
And unfortunately, for the last two decades, AM radio specifically has been very much screaming radio.
That's right.
So what seeds you have sown we have sown as a country for the last 20 years has come back right now.
Amen. Donald Trump did not come out of nowhere. He came out of 20 years of talk radio.
Absolutely. And why did he resonate? Why did he basically obliterate 7 or 9 candidates, whatever it was?
For 20 years, talk radio, particularly on the right, has been saying the world's coming to an end, making everybody angry and mad, and then just elect Republicans and we'll fix it. And, of course, they didn't fix it or couldn't fix it or wouldn't fix it or whatever adjective you want to put. I mean, they're not the majority. They can't just dictate to the rest of us what they want to do, nor were they really intent on doing a lot of the things.
They just want a vocal minority can be very damaging.
They wanted to whip you up so you'd vote for them, and then you would calm down later and they could go about the business of government and compromise. And when people saw that, they were upset. So the statistic that I still think nobody pays enough attention to in this election cycle throughout the primaries, particularly on the Republican side, even on the Democratic side, but particularly on the Republican side, 50% of the people polled on the way out all said what? We feel betrayed. Not just angry. We feel betrayed. Well, you guys tricked us. You, the Republican leadership, told us you were going to – you told us how bad it was, so we voted for you, and then – you didn't defund Obamacare. You didn't do all these other things you promised you would do.
Well,
because it wasn't doable.
Did you see the way that the roll call request state by state go down?
Well, some of the states.
That was embarrassing how that went down. They shut down, actually, due process.
Well, yeah.
Because one person, and the verbiage was, well, you know, the person at the podium, whatever his title is, basically decided the yeas and the nays added. We basically had, the little applause meter.
Oh, yeah, right.
The applause meter for the yeas. The applause meter for the nays. Oh, yeah, the yeas have it. I'm like,
There was one state, Alaska, I think, that insisted on and that slowed the whole process down, they insisted on a roll call vote for their state. So each member had to come up to the mic and say how they were voting because they wanted to put people on the record. Okay, later on, I want you to be on the record. You voted for this buffoon here. I'm sorry. That's my opinion. But
it's the right color hair.
The other thing that strikes me about all this is the tone. One is the fact that we're all stoking fear and negativity and anger to drive all of this stuff here. The other part is, does anybody – what's going to happen? Let's say the other side. Let's say Trump wins. Okay.
Yeah.
Is Trump going to deliver any more on these preposterous things that he said than other previous Republicans? Are we really going to build a wall?
No.
Is Mexico really going to pay for it? Are we really going to round up? Think about this. 15 million
did he say people. Did he say Mexico is going to build the wall, or did he say Mexican laborers are going to build the wall?
Yeah, that could be.
Right?
That could be. But think about this. If we, I don't know why Barack Obama or somebody doesn't put it this plainly. If we really tried to round up 15 million people in this country, do you know what kind of a police state we'd have to create to do that? How would we do it? We'd have to go door to door. What if people hid them?
Job creation.
Like Anne Frank was hidden from the Nazis. Would we go door to door and break down the doors and say there's a Mexican in there, and are we going to throw out search and seizure laws? We're going to go sit block by block, and then when we round them up, are they all going to go willingly? None of them are going to fight. None of them are going to shoot back.
And
then one last thing. Once we collect them, what do we do with them? Aren't we going to create massive concentration
camps? Of course. Of course, but that's not, you know, I'm sure that the incarceration industry will probably then basically
ratchet into
that as well.
So the Republican people who are saying absolutely, the Donald Trump says they all must go, and we will round them all up. We're going to hire that many police. We're going to go door to door searching for them, and we're going to create massive concentration camps to hold them until we can what? Push them across the border and dump them out on the other side? That is so ludicrous and absurd, as John Kasich and others said.
Paul, let me ask you, though.
Here's the simple...
Whether you think it should be done,
Here's the simple, not moral, not nationalist approach. Here's the simple business money-based reasoning that's not going to happen. Okay?
If you got rid of cheap labor...
Oh, yeah.
Those same companies that are basically screaming about building a wall are the ones that will suffer the most, because now their cost of production is going to go up, or are they going to outsource more jobs overseas?
Yeah.
So it makes no sense. This is all just rhetoric. The last couple of days, especially yesterday, where it was supposed to be law and order, and I'm not, by the way, we happen to be talking about the Republicans. I want to say the Democrats, in my opinion, are equally bad.
Oh, they're going to do something very similar.
Next week. You wait and see. We will be talking about them next week the same way. Okay,
right.
But the topic or the slogan for yesterday's thing shouldn't have been made "Making America Great Again."
Mm-hmm.
It should have been "Making America Fear Again."
That's it. That's all. Okay. You nailed it right there.
Making America Fear Again, because if you're afraid, I'm going to get you to do whatever the heck I want to do.
Right. Now, so
if you're afraid of Donald Trump being president, I'm going to get you to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Absolutely.
This us against them bullshit, excuse me, okay, is killing us. The first thing we need to do is make sure that we stop talking. I mean, you almost fell victim to that kind of conditioning yesterday on the train's platform.
I did fall victim to it, right. And I had to stop myself and consciously change my outlook and approach this kid. Now, I could have been right, and he could have said, F you, and pulled a knife, and all these things are running through my head, but he didn't.
Because that's
fear. That's not reality.
But here's the irony of all ironies, okay? You had your grandchild with you,
right?
Grandson, right?
Right.
Your grandson, who is what kind of mixed ethnicity?
Oh, he's Hispanic. He's 100% Hispanic.
So you had a white 60-year-old man standing to a grandson who is
100%
Hispanic.
Because we adopted our daughter.
Right, 100% Hispanic.
Right.
On a platform in where?
Santa Ana.
In Santa Ana, Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a young black American male standing at the platform.
And I was scared.
And you were scared.
Yeah. And I thought... I was so angry at how I felt. I was so angry at feeling that way again. It's been years since I felt that way. And I thought, this is exactly what they want me to do, both sides. They want me to be afraid.
I want to hear from you guys. If you've been listening or you just joined us, call us at 949-330-7761. Let's feel a little love from you guys here. We've spent a lot of time on the politics side of it. I want to talk a little bit about the Pokemon thing because I think it's actually brilliant.
Well, let's take a commercial and we'll come back.
Yeah, we're going to think about it and call us after the commercial.
Do you have a desire to be a part of a conscious community? I mean a community of people who get together with the purpose of strengthening their awareness muscles, deepening their relationships, and striving for the extraordinary? Check out how to get started at productivelearning.com. We are a unique self-development company, and we believe that we all have the innate ability to create and live the lives we truly want. But we also know that ability needs to be nurtured and developed. That's why we offer over 40 different workshops to our conscious community. Workshops that intentionally stretch you beyond your comfort zone towards what you truly want. Our workshops are not ordinary. We take journeys across the world, from exotic scuba diving trips to rich cultural getaways. And we offer amazing workshops right here in South Orange County. Join us and find out just how extraordinary life can be. Go to productivelearning.com today or call Lisa Reed at 949-234-0628. To see how you can be a part of our conscious community, that's productivelearning.com or 949-234-0628.
If you are like the majority of Americans, you want to continue living in a familiar environment throughout your maturing years. In fact, according to many surveys, 82% of homeowners overwhelmingly prefer to age in place, which means living in their current homes safely, independently, and comfortably, regardless of age or ability level. With over 30 years of combined experience in residential, commercial, hospitality, and destination resorts fields, your home for a lifetime is a company dedicated to empowering you to maintain your quality of life and independence by helping you make your house your home for a lifetime. Do you want to reorganize or remodel your home? Do you want to add a full bathroom and possibly a bedroom on the main floor? Are you looking to make your kitchen more functional? Is an aging parent moving in, or your child is moving out, or even moving back in? Call Your Home for a Lifetime at 949-492-1872 or check them out on the web at yourhomeforalifetime.com and find out how they can help you make your house your home for a lifetime.
All right, here we go. We're back. So from the absurdity of politics and the anger it provokes in me, because it's making me fearful again here, to the absurdity of Pokemon. I thought Pokemon was dead. I still don't get this crazy thing that's going on. You're playing this game.
And there are people that are afraid of Pokemon Go.
Well, because people are doing insane things. I had a young guy in here the other day who's interning for me. He turned me on that there's if you want to come and get a Pokemon, he's down in our lobby waiting for you.
Yeah, what's the address of our Pokemon?
3420 Bristol, right? The Bristol and Sunflower.
3420 Bristol.
Right across from
there's
the
a Pokemon.
Yeah, right, he's waiting for you right there. And so he was all excited because he came and said, I got him. I got the Pokemon here. But I guess anybody can capture this guy. He's just, you have to find him.
Yeah, yeah.
He's in our lobby now.
I'll show you how to play the game later.
Okay.
And so, hey, Perry, nice to see you.
And so I said to
him. I hope Robin is doing well.
And so I said to him, his name's Ernie. I said, so Ernie, what about these people who are running across streets and running around with their head buried in their, you know, GPS/smartphone here trying to find one of these things, and they're walking into walls, they're walking off cliffs, they're walking in front of trucks. And he said, natural selection.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's how we cut the herd.
Yeah, exactly. You have no problem with that one. If you're that dumb, then good. Well, that's more Pokemons for me.
So let me ask you, what do you think, if you were to look back at this whole period, right? Do you think we are coming to a paradigm shift, a moment of truth as a country, on the things that we will embrace and the things that we will get, you know, very passionate about, and the things that basically we are losing passion for? I mean, are we going to become more the community that, or the country that's basically engaged in Pokemon Go and whatever the next thing is? Mm-hmm. Or are we going to, and is it an escapism from the craziness that's happening on the other side right now through the political arena and the circus that's going on? Where are we heading? Are we heading off that cliff?
I'll tell you where I think we're heading. And I think this was maybe this is over people's head, but I love history, and I'm always using historical analogies. There was a really interesting article in the Wall Street Journal in the last week here, where somebody wrote about the comparison between William Jennings Bryan, go Google him, ran for president three times on the Democratic ticket, a very populist-like, he didn't have much experience, he'd only been a congressman twice, lost the Senate in Nebraska, and then somehow at 34 was the youngest person ever selected by any political party to run for president, and then he ran two more times after that, so three altogether. And he was known for his wild oratory. Don't crucify me on your cross of gold. He wanted us to go back to a silver and gold standard, and somehow he thought that would save the nation. And so he made all these dramatic speeches about this. And the point of the article was, who was William Jennings Bryan? He was supported by small farmers across America.
Mm-hmm.
Small, that's where he came from. Those are the people that support him. They were overwhelmingly white, and they were overwhelmingly poor. Mm-hmm. Small.
I was going to say, how much gold did they have?
Yeah. So he was the last gasp of that group of people that originally was the dominant force in America.
Mm-hmm.
But as cities grew up after the Civil War and started exploding, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, Detroit, all these cities started to grow and prosper, there was a shift away from, we don't care what the small farmer thinks mm-hmm. about anymore. We think about what big business and big cities think about.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, after the failure of William Jennings Bryan to running three times, the Democratic Party gave up on the small farmers altogether and reshifted their attention to the factory workers. So suddenly they supported unions, and they supported immigrants and big cities and all these people that the small farmers hated.
So where are we going, Paul? I mean,
Donald Trump's the last gasp of the white ruling class, aging white male ruling class, And when they fail, as I hope they will, they're going to lose their voice altogether. The Republican Party is going to find some new constituency.
You know what,
may take two or three cycles.
You know what? I said that two, three cycles ago.
Yeah.
Okay? And it's definitely gotten more. All that's happened is, I think, the core group of people that represent whatever fraction or faction it is in this country have gotten more insular. They've gotten more entrenched. Okay? And they've gotten more radical. Okay, now, to a certain extent, that's understandable because as you have somebody that's going through the death kicks of a hanging ideology, okay,
that one group handing power to another.
Right, but do you actually believe we are going to see a major paradigm shift into this one way or the other in 2016?
It won't take one cycle. The point of this was it took William Jennings Bryan had to run three times on the Democratic ticket before the Democrats finally said, enough of this. We're not going to build our party around the handful of shrinking small white farmers that are left. We're going to go after a new constituency, and the Republicans will do the same thing after two or three cycles like this.
I have seven people watching live. I want to ask you guys to just hit your like button for it when I ask the question, okay? Here's the question. I'm going to do three of them, okay?
And then
how many people that are listening are going to vote or think they're going to vote right now for Hillary Clinton?
Hit your thumbs.
Hit your thumbs.
How many thumbs up?
Okay. I haven't seen any yet. So, again, the question is how many people are going to vote for Hillary Clinton right now that are watching me live?
Hit your smartphone. Hit a thumbs up.
Okay, we got one from Josh. Josh, by the way, said he loves WJB, but except that he hated alcohol and evolution. Right, so there you go. So the Democrat who hated alcohol and revolution.
He's exactly
right.
He was the lawyer. One of his last things was he was a lawyer arguing against in the Scopes Monkey trial against Clinton.
Well, Josh, I have an answer to that. That was before they had an open bar at the Democratic Party. Okay. So, how many people that are watching? How many people? Now we got 10 people. How many people that are watching think they're going to vote for Donald Trump?
If there's any of them there, unfriend them.
No, I'm not going to unfriend anybody over political discourse. Give me a break. Okay? All right. So how many people think they really would like to have a third option?
Yeah. How many of those 10 would vote for somebody?
How many people that are watching us live right now would actually prefer to have a third option, not Hillary and not Donald, to vote for?
Or none of the above, just simply none of the above.
I just got half of the people that are watching saying
sure,
that. Okay.
Of course. That's what we
I mean, it's not a scientific survey, people, but, you know, that is an indication of something.
So let me ask them a hard question. I've been hesitant to ask this one on the air because I think this is the inflammatory question underneath all this that nobody wants to ask.
What's the inflammatory question?
All right. Can America still be America if it's no longer white?
Can America be America? Okay, we'll ask that question. So if you think the answer is yes, say, please type in yes. How many Americans, believe, or how many people that are watching believe that America can still be America
if it wasn't
majority white?
Right. Can we still be a country if we're brown and yellow?
Can we still be America if we're brown, yellow,
or
black?
Will we become something else? And because that's the fear. Donald Trump says we're going to take the country back. We're going to make America great again.
White Anglo-Saxon, Liz.
Yeah, right. So
Catholic or Protestant, take your pick.
Yeah, in the old days, that would have been a big distinction, but that doesn't seem to matter anymore. Those two.
Right.
Those
there two were there were days when, you know, down to Kennedy, right, where it was like, you know, Protestant, Catholic, that was even a divisive thing.
Right.
Right.
So and that's shocking me. Or you can pose it another way. Can America still exist? Can America still be America if we don't speak English?
Thank you, Fariba. Yes, America is an idea, a set of values,
bingo.
Not a race.
Bingo.
And this is from somebody who, correct me if I'm wrong, Fariba, is a Baha'i of Persian descent.
See, there you go.
Business owner.
And I'll tell you my other story about this. I know we got a few minutes left.
Thanks, Fariba.
I'm traveling in Montreal a few years ago with my family, and I'm marveling at the fact that everybody in the cafe where we're sitting is speaking French. And so I foolishly, let's say, like a typical bad American, why are these people still speaking French in an English country? Didn't they get the memo? The French and English fought over this 300 years ago, and the French lost. So it's an English country. And the minute I said that, it was like I had dropped a stink bomb in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately people came over to me and said, forgive me, sir, now in English, But you don't know, this is not an English-speaking country. This is a French country. At least this part of it is still French.
Where were you, Quebec? I was in Quebec.
Yeah. And so,
good thing you didn't get lynched.
And I thought to myself later, I thought, you know, that's what, if America is exceptional, and I think we are, what makes us exceptional is that we're bound together, just like your guests or your listeners said, by an idea and not by a race or a religion or any other sort of tribal thing. What binds us together is the idea of liberty, equality, and opportunity.
And I'll tell you how precise that is for you, but thank you so much for that, because here's the thing. The idea of America is a popular idea everywhere.
Oh, the whole world.
That is what we export. When we go overseas and we say, you know, we're American, blah, blah, it is the idea of America that people are buying into. The way that we execute the idea of America today, okay, is almost an abomination compared to what the idea was. Okay, and we are being, we claim, you know, founding fathers, and we claim all this and stuff. We don't act like that.
And this idea is not only under attack, in my opinion, here in this country, but around the world. You were born in Iraq. Iraq doesn't see itself as a country anymore, from what I can tell. It's three different tribes, groups fighting. The Shiites, the Sunnis, and the Kurds are all, like, would really like to split apart. The in Syria, all these groups are fighting over it. And in England, look, good old jolly old England, they basically said, if we stay in the European Union, Eastern Europeans will continue to flood over here, Poles and others, and Britain will no longer be Britain. It won't be British if it's filled with
Poles. Liz Terry, who is in the UK, actually. Hi, Liz. Thanks for this. She says, the question that goes to the heart of why people are scared, they think that they will lose their identity somehow. And this is the same thing that's happening here, that has been going on, that has been fueled by 20 years of fear-mongering talk radio.
Right.
Okay? That basically have made money upon money for a lot of talk show hosts.
Scaring
people. Fear is a is a control mechanism.
Okay. And fear sells. It motivates.
It's a high adrenaline feeling.
Yeah.
Negative.
You tune in.
Right.
You watch. You can't take your eyes off.
So you know, it is something that is global, unfortunately. There's a global disease of people feeling that they are basically losing their identity.
Exactly.
The interesting thing about that is there's a little bit of also NIMBY attitude. There's a not in my own backyard, I got mine, you can't have yours. Because at some point or the other, and maybe even more so in the United States than elsewhere in other parts of the world, right?
Right.
California is a perfect example. Maybe this is why we're so messed up over here. 90% of the population in California is from somewhere else.
Yeah.
So the fact that they may be from another state, if we really wanted to take the same approach that we do with minorities or people from other countries or other ethnicities and apply that to California to people from different states, okay, whether it's the slang, the twang, the whatever, the habits, you know, wearing socks with your friggin', you know, flip-flops, whatever it is, right?
Wait a second, I did that.
You did that? Okay, well, we won't talk about it. Please don't wear it in front of me, though, right? Okay. But the thing about that is, this is what kills us.
Yeah.
Okay. The reality is not this. At some point or the other, we were all new to a neighborhood. We were new to some place.
But I think this is the underlying thing. And your friend in England nailed it. We're all afraid that we're losing our identity. And my question, that's why I put the two together, is our identity as Americans tied into the color of our skin and the language we speak?
Okay.
Or is our idea what the other person suggested?
Okay, so
in our head, it's an idea.
I'm going to say that, yes, you can still be America if you are not
majority
white, Anglo-Saxon white.
Can we be America?
You guys agree?
Let's see what they say.
Give me a thumbs up if you agree. But how do we get past this? How do we deal with this? I mean, it is something that is killing us.
I think it's built into all of us, this tribalism, this feeling of us versus them. But that's what America. Think about what happens here. Somebody told me years ago, I remember when I came to California in 1980, this is right after the Arab-Israeli conflicts of the 70s and the
76 War.
76 War and all that. And I come to Beverly Hills, and Beverly Hills at that time was largely populated with two groups, Arab-speaking people and Jewish people. People who would, on the other side of the world, be killing each other.
Which, by the way, I will tell you again. Okay, the problem with that, because it is very divisive and there's money in division, okay, there's power and control and influence in division, right? Those people that you're talking about, okay, Judaism, Islam, Christianity are religions.
Right.
Okay. For the longest time,
they're supposed to be religions.
For the longest, for the longest
love
time,
and peace.
For the long, but there were the longest time. People who lived in that part of the world were people who lived in that part of the world. They just happened to have different, slight differences in a monotheistic religion.
Okay? Oddly enough, one that has shares the
it
same
wasn't
book.
Oddly enough, that shared the same book and referred to each other.
Yeah.
Okay. So the thing about it is, that is not a basis for nationality. That is not a basis for ethnicity. Sure, it is actually a religion.
So here's my question, though. So why, then, this is to finish the thought, these same people who are living side by side as neighbors in Beverly Hills would be shooting at each other if they were still in Palestine? What is it about when they transplant themselves to America that they put aside those religious hates? They might still not like each other, but they're not out shooting each other anymore here.
Because when it comes to situations like that, I really believe, and I happen to be one side of that equation, okay, on the Palestinian side, I actually believe that there's more commonalities between people that are called of Jewish descent and people that may not be followers of Judaism but are maybe from that same era. We are the same, like different tribes from the same tree.
Yeah,
from the same tree, right? These are not Philistines, as most people will say the Palestinians are Philistines. It's not. Those were Greeks. Okay?
Makes sense.
The tribes of Abraham, actually, it's not just one tribe. Okay, and I'm botching the heck out of this thing, but I know that there's a reason why
there are 12 tribes.
Yeah, the 12 tribes. There's a reason why people refer to each other as cousins, kind of, you know,
in that region.
In that region, and I have had my own personal experience on when it comes to people to people, is all of that stuff goes away.
But see, I don't disagree with that.
I have more conversations with people that are friends of mine that happen to be Jewish about our overbearing mothers and what food we eat.
Yeah, when I talk to this boy, I didn't see him as anything but him. But when I saw him, he represented all my fear of this other race.
So how do we get you over your fear?
Well,
let's bring this really home.
Yeah.
How do we get you over your fear?
I'll tell you the truth. I think it starts with talking to each other and not seeing each other as stereotypes, but seeing each other as individuals and people. And I'll give you another example. Years ago, I worked in this is in the 70s. This was not that long after the race riots in Detroit, which really split Detroit apart. Once the race riot in 67 happened, there was white flight in massive scale that left the city of Detroit 90% black and the suburbs 90% white. I mean, it was as they say, ethnic cleansing, or it was, people just moved instantly away from each other. So I went down and for several summers worked in an auto plant, and I was... A handful of white people were in this plant, and the majority of them were black people. And I would, we'd start to get in these conversations, and they would start to say, "Well, you people," from both sides. And I said,
You people.
And I said, "Wait a minute." And I look at the, I'm sorry to say, I grew up in a wealthy suburb. My dad was an executive. He was just giving me this job as a summer job. And most of the guys that worked there were what I considered hillbillies. So I looked at both groups as alien and foreign to me. And the white guys would come over and they'd say, "Hey, son, you know, those people over there," and I'm like, "Those people, does that mean I'm one of you? No, I don't feel connected to you at all." And then the other group would come over and they say, "Well, you know, you people," and I'm like, "Wait a minute, it's not you people talking to me. I'm not part of a people or anything. It's just me, you and me." And both groups wanted to separate us. When I went to the University of Michigan later, in fact, I'll tell you the other funny story. So I met a girl there who was I worked as a security
guard. We're on open air. Can you talk about this?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Why not? I've told the story before to my wife or whatever. I met this girl. I thought she was stunningly beautiful. She was black, and I was white. I'm from the wealthy suburbs. She's from the inner city. And so I did what most young men do when they see an attractive single woman. I asked her out. And she was flattered, but she looked at me so shocked, and she said, "Where would we go?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. I'll drive down and pick you up." She said, "You ain't coming into my neighborhood. They'll kill you." And I said, "Well, then you come out to my neighborhood." She said, "I'm not going out to your neighborhood. They'll kill me out there, too. They'll kill me."
And the difference being is today that person may be wearing a hijab.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, and I thought, I was so stunned. And I thought, yeah, she was right. And we never went out. I thought, you're right. I don't know where we would go out together. Even though I thought she was funny and I thought she was beautiful. And would love to have gone out with her. Now, today's millennials don't see the world, thankfully, the same way. They don't see anything about black or white
in
marriage. They don't see anything about gay or straight.
So that's an interesting thing, though, okay, because we are, at the end of the day, this show, The Rad Life, is an aging journey, right? So let me ask you this, okay? Is that filter, is that jadedness, is that fear, something that happens over time? For one way or the other, does it get less or more over time? Is the things that we are crediting the millennials with? I mean, I guess only time will tell, right? Are the things that we are crediting the millennials with as being tolerance, more coexistence oriented, what have you?
More.
Is it something that is indicative of that generation because of the point in time in history that we are as a nation?
Yes.
Or is it something that's because they're younger?
Both. I think it's something that gets, I think you do get a little more antagonistic towards others as you get older. You get a little more crotchety. You want to be just, it's those people, it's them, it's all that kind of stuff. That may be some of it, but I really do think it's a reflection of the time that we live in, because I think this is taught to you when you're very young. And I think somehow the baby boomers did try to be more open-minded, even though we do have, they still, the fears haven't gone away. We've just, they're implicit and not explicit. I don't say the N-word anymore, but I still might be afraid of seeing somebody who's black. I still might not care if people, if gay people get married, but I'm still a little uncomfortable sometimes when I'm around them.
Well, and
so I'm going to catch it or something.
Well, and I'll also add to the fact
that... I'm just being honest.
And somebody said, you know, you're very brave to be, you know, to basically talk about your bias, but I think, you know, some of the points that some people are saying on here, I think it's important. It's important to say, look, here's the deal.
Right.
This is who I am. I can be vulnerable and open enough to share my personal, even if it's biased, because that's the only way I'm going to get past it, is to actually talk about this.
Yeah. I know it's stupid, and I know it's unreasonable, and I have to force myself to fight those things, but those are things that were bred into me when I was a little kid, and to a certain degree, I still carry some of that baggage with me. So I think the young people today were...
It's a good point, Liz.
Is buried with that.
Well, Liz says that the heartening thing is that millennials have grown up in a globalized world, and they have friends from every nation and every color through technology.
That's true.
And when they come of age, they will sweep, and it says see more. But, I mean, I get the gist, Liz, and I think it's very true. The double-edged sword of the Internet is that same hatred can also be magnified through anonymity against certain minorities and stuff like that. So the hope is that we still understand that we as parents, if we want to instill that coexistence capability in our kids, is that we give them the tools and strengthen their resolve in being able to deal with that. Because the Internet is literally playing, it's like playing, you know, instead of playing on a small, nice tree, overgrown tree street, you're literally playing ball in the freeway. Right, and sometimes something is going to hit you from the side, and it's going to basically try to shatter your ideology, shatter yourself. Trust me, I have a page, and people that are on here, maybe that are members of What Do You Think San Clemente, know this. We have 2,700 people, geographically more or less constrained, right, by San Clemente or South County, and at the same time, the venom that sometimes passes through, even in a community where it's a closed group and more likely than not people know each other, because of the anonymity of the monitor, basically becomes hideous. And I have to basically delete and try to correct and rectify. I think kids have the potential as millennials to get us to the next level, but we have to not forget that we have to arm them with the tools that they need to navigate.
But she's saying the point that anonymity then it makes them all colorblind. It makes them all racially blind. It makes them all sexually blind here. They just see them as people and not as gay people, as Muslims, as Chinese, as African Americans, as everything. It is kind of a... equally anonymous on the internet.
And what I'm saying is, there's a little bit of your hippie baby boomer idealism in that.
Yeah.
Because there's also a lot of localized, entrenched, polarized information out there, and how it is delivered. And so, you know, it's like everything else.
You can find your own little black hole, black pole.
If you want, you pretty much can feed whatever side of your soul that you want on the Internet.
So you can connect with people globally, or you can be very isolated into one little section.
So this is interesting. I did not realize this, Liz, but it is maybe indicative also of what's happening here with the Bernie Sanders. I mean, here's a 70-year-old Jewish man from New York with white hair, unkept. I actually really, did anybody see him after when he came up and basically endorsed or leading up to the endorsement of Hillary Clinton? Did it seem like Bernie Sanders actually got a haircut and got stylized and groomed? Because, and I felt like something was lost. Here's this guy with the wild hair, and then all of a sudden he's got, like, the coiffed hair. And it's like, oh, no, not the boardroom.
He's getting corrupted.
Right? But Liz says that, you know, in the U.K., 70% of the young people wanted to stay in the EU.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? And it was the old people who wanted to leave, which, again, Liz talks to that fear factor, even though that old generation is actually the equivalent of our hippie generation here.
See, I don't know. I think I'm going to say –
which is interesting.
I'll challenge Liz on this here.
Hey, Scott, nice to see you.
I'm not sure that if Britain became overwhelmingly Muslim or Polish or any of these other groups that have moved, immigrated into England that were causing such tension, that if Britain...
Their equivalent of our Latinos or Mexicans coming across the border.
Right. If the country was not overwhelmingly English, would it still be England? Because the country was created on a notion of we all have a certain accent, we all have a certain... Most of us have a certain religion. Most of us have a certain color and look and whatever. And when you mix that up ethnically, it becomes something different than what it was. Whereas America was not created as one, maybe it was an English colony for the most part, but by and large, it's been accepting immigrants from the beginning.
Well, we forget that those people were actually immigrants, right? Because the Native Americans never spoke English.
Yeah.
Well, right, okay.
I'll give you another interesting statistic. Up until Obama... Can you tell me how many United States... Obama was, I think, the 43rd or 44th president.
Yeah, 44th, I think.
Of those 40-some presidents, how many did not have an English or an Irish name? Three. Four. You had the two Roosevelts, which is a Dutch name, because New York was a Dutch colony, and so they're from New York. You had the other one, whose name now escapes me from the John Quincy Adams. The other one who was Dutch from the middle of the 1800s.
But you're three Dutchmen.
Yeah. And one German, Eisenhower, who happened to run the war against Germany.
Right, yeah.
We'd have never had a Norwegian, a French, a Spanish, an Italian president, much less a African-American or a... Muslim or somebody from the Far East. Mm-hmm. Every president up until this point, with a couple exceptions, has had an English or an Irish name. So as much as we think of ourselves as a multicultural melting pot, we are still on some level electing English and Irishmen like the people who first founded this country.
So here's interesting, right? Okay. Nobody pointed out Bernie Sanders' religion. Throughout the whole campaign,
I thought that was shocking.
Everybody pointed out
we've never had a Sanders president.
Yeah, but nobody pointed out Bernie Sanders' religion as a basis for any kind of concern or any kind of differentiation. Mm-hmm. Not once, right? And yet, even at the friggin' Republican convention this week, okay, where you are not running against Obama anymore, okay? Obama's leaving. There was still the Obama is a Muslim.
Martin Van Buren. That's the one I couldn't think of.
Martin Van Buren. Right. Okay. Dutch. So, I mean, it's kind of crazy, right?
Did anybody watch the speech by Dr. Ben Carson?
Oh, God, Lord.
And he, again, they get into the Saul Alinsky stuff. I never even heard of Saul Alinsky. He's supposed to be this famous radical... guru. Yeah. I, quite frankly, until the right wing started talking about it, had never heard of him, and I was there in the 60s, in the 70s. But whoever this guy was, and he wrote the Revolutionary's Handbook or whatever, Radical's Handbook or something.
Yeah. Religion's Handbook.
And supposedly he influenced both Obama and Hillary and all these other 60-something Democratic leaders. Which I don't think is true.
Founding fathers, American Revolution,
exactly.
So all of a sudden,
and apparently he claims that somewhere, which I don't even know if this is true, that somewhere in the preface of the book that Saul Alinsky, you know, praises Satan or something here, and he made this. To me, that just seems like a wild urban legend. I'd like to really check it out and get this book and see if this guy really did praise Satan in the beginning of this book, or dedicate it to Lucifer or something. But he says this without any concern. So all of a sudden, Hillary, by definition, is a devil worshiper.
Yeah, but by association. You know, you picked up a book.
She read a book, and she may or may not have liked it and followed this guy's book, and therefore And he, and because he worships Satan, therefore you're a Satan worshiper.
Yeah, well, you know, they'll, you know, it's how like many, the, how many people read?
There's a name
50,
for that in
50
philosophy.
Shades of Grey. Does that make you kind of like a perverted sexual deviant?
I forgot
never
the name
run for political office.
I forgot the name for this in philosophy, but there's a name for this, and it basically says, you know, the analogy is this. See if I can get this right. Love is blind. Ray Charles is blind. I'm sorry. God is love.
Yeah.
Love is blind.
Yeah.
Ray Charles is blind.
So God is blind.
Ray Charles.
God is Ray Charles. And for those who love Ray Charles, could maybe,
or you could say
I could actually consider that.
Yeah. Okay. So you this false association that because one thing is associated with this, that the two are the same.
Okay, I know we oscillate on this show for anybody who's watching.
And, there's a name
and it was
that.
Very, very serious, and now we're going to get it very light. But to somebody's point earlier, humor is an important thing. We can't be constantly in a stress situation.
No.
As a country, as individuals, we cannot be in that way. So there has to be a place for us to release, for a place for us to basically be able to talk about this stuff, place for us to be able to just duke it out or even just have a differing points of view.
Or to admit that, I still have some of those
or
feelings.
Admit that I didn't write that friggin' speech.
Right? I admit I didn't write
going full circle.
Exactly.
But I don't know, Paul, how much more time you're going to give us. I know we went over
We'll go
the
to
hour.
The bottom of the hour.
Okay, so we'll go to
Good
the bottom.
10 more minutes.
10 more minutes. But I want to, again, give out the number. If anybody has been watching and what you guys want to give a call and shout out, let me know. What do you think about this format of open mic? The number is 949-330-7761. It'll put you right through to us. There's no switchboard, there's no middleman.
Pick up the phone,
so,
put you on the air.
You know,
you can talk to the world.
I will echo what Liz just said, Liz Terry, who just said that. And I just want to give a little background to Liz. I mean, there's a lot of us that are
Liz.
Okay. There's a lot of us that are basically involved in wellness, in the spa industry, and it's not just a pampering situation. There is actually a philosophy of self-care, self-nourishing, so that you can be a resource for others. If
right.
you don't give to yourself, you can't be there for others, right? And Liz just said, American politics is pretty out of control. I would argue
world politics.
Pretty much anywhere in the world has been out of control, especially if you've lived in certain parts of the world that I've lived in before. This is not necessarily something new.
And tell us where those are, because you're alluding
to it. I was born in Baghdad.
Baghdad. There's a scary sounding place.
Well, it wasn't back then.
Right.
None of my aunts wore burqas. They all had professional degrees. They had all college graduates. They were all working, you know. There was no religious anonymity animosity. I'm Greek Orthodox and Catholic, living in a country that is predominantly, you know, Muslim.
So
there was never an issue. Before 1948, there was never an issue about somebody being Jewish, Egyptian, or Jewish Syrian, or Jewish Iraqi. I mean, people just lived side by side. You just prayed in a different way to the same supposed God.
Right.
You know? And then I grew up in Abu Dhabi for a couple of years when there was absolutely nothing but, like, my dad was literally an engineer building infrastructure bridges and the first airport. We went to Kuwait. I was there for about almost a decade, and then I went over to Switzerland. So
In Kuwait during the invasion?
No. My father was there for 10 days, but I was there during the Iran-Iraq War,
right,
which was literally like saying, I live in in South Los Angeles County, and the war was going on in
Orange County,
Mission Viejo.
Yeah, right.
Right? So, I mean, and we still lived fine, right? I have a lot of family that live in Lebanon. They lived through all those years of war.
Lebanon, oh
right.
My God.
So this issue of politics being a ugly, divisive thing is not new, okay? But you used to at least accept the fact that that was something that happened in countries that were developing. I won't even say under
those
people. Right?
Those people. See, again, right? There's
and
us.
The idea of America was something that was universal.
Exactly.
That didn't have a color of skin attached to it. That didn't have a religion attached to it. A freedom of choice, freedom of religion, freedom of pursuing your life. To your point earlier, sort of almost a libertarian attitude of not a lot of government,
right.
You know, fiscally conservative. I stretch my legs to the length of my blanket, you know. Which is what my grandfather used to say. My grandfather used to say that you stretch your legs to the length of your blanket.
What a cool quote!
That was my grandfather on Wall Street, right there.
That
said that, right? And that's what the idea of America was. Right. So I grew up in those places. Politics was never, it's been maybe a new thing for it to be ugly in the West because they supposedly had gone through their ugly period.
We went through a civil war, the worst civil war. Do you realize the American Civil War, I used to be a student of the Civil War. I was fascinated by it. The American Civil War was the worst civil war in world history. Nobody slaughtered each other as largely, as efficiently as we did when we fought over slavery and states' rights.
We've been engaged in a foreign war longer than the two world wars together longer than the duration that Russia was in, or the USSR was in, Afghanistan.
Absolutely. But let me
And yet, in our psyche, we just accept it as business as usual.
When they watch the
PBS, George Orwell, anybody?
Yeah, or 1984 came and went. And look at the wonderful series created by Ken Burns on the Civil War. That was his first big triumph on PBS, where this documentary style that he perfected of telling a story and zooming in on the pictures and having people voice the actors and voice the participants. In that story, at the very end of it, he says something, and I don't think Americans have heard it enough, so I'm going to say it again. Before our American Civil War, 150 years ago, before our American Civil War, the states who had united used to say the United States of America are a great country. Mm-hmm. We thought of ourselves as
the United States of America, a union of
grammatically, that's correct. When you have plural states, then you use the plural verb. The United States are. But after the Civil War, suddenly people started to say this, what is grammatically incorrect, the United States is. We were one. We had to finally let all the blood and the anger out in an ugly fashion for us to finally come together as one.
So which one do you think we should be doing now?
It scares me. It feels like we're headed towards civil war again. I mean, if not actual combat, some sort of version of it here.
So, but do you think we should refer ourselves to ourselves as an is or an are?
I think that's the question the world's trying to figure. Is Britain an is, or is Britain an are part of the greater European Union? Are the Iraqis one nation, or are they three nations? Are the Irish one country or two countries? In fact, it's weird now that for so long the Northern Irish, I'm Irish, and so I'm steeped in Irish history too. This group of people that live in the North came there when William the Conqueror, William and Mary fame, came over and conquered Ireland for the English the last time. And as a reward to his soldiers, he gave them large tracts of land. So they largely settled in the North. This was the English people living in the North. Up until now, that was in the Battle of Boyne, was in 1610, I think, or something like that, when they had this battle. So for 400 years, those people have thought of themselves as English settlers in Ireland. Well, and when Ireland split away from England, they said, not us. We're still Englishmen. We are part of Ulster, we're going to be in part of the United Kingdom. Now that England has left the European Union, there's some mention about, because they benefited, like the Scots did, from that association with the European trade markets.
Right.
They may break away and go back and join their Irish brethren, because suddenly that seems a better thing than throwing in their lot with the rest of the Irish.
So what are we doing? We're doing tribal allegiances.
Yeah.
And tribal alliances.
Did you ever read the book by Seth Godin called Tribes? It's the business book, and it's all about how as business people, and
people use that all the time now. Oh, it's my tribe or our tribe.
And whether it's a business or a community, it's a tribe.
Well, I think people, I mean, to your point about England, and Liz, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it goes even back when the Vikings and the 800s, and you know, where Wessex was the only place that was remaining because they had obliterated all these other kingdoms,
the
last kingdom standing, and then
the
they basically from there. And I think it was, I'm going to say Alfred. I think it was Alfred the First or Alfred the Great. I think he's one of the
few
people
Alfred the Great. I've heard that. Right. Yeah.
That basically, you know, that kind of tie changed. But I just want to go back to this because I'd like to close with this. You know, we've talked about a lot of things that would cause anybody to be demoralized, apathetic, maybe paralyzed, feel paralyzed, feel a lot of fear, you know. And I want to just leave us with this because I think not struggling with this, but actually giving this thing a lot of thought. And it's very simple, and it's linguistic. It's and words are important. Words mean things.
Yes.
Okay. Whether they're coming out of your mouth,
whether it's the United States or the United States is.
Yeah. What is it? Are we, as the United States, are we as a human beings that have inhabit this planet? Are we an R, or are we an is?
Yeah. Are we part of one group, or are we many groups just bound together by some compact?
So this is the question I'm putting out to everybody, and you guys can basically send me a comment on Facebook, or you can call in at the number, which, you know, now it's going to be, if you can call in the next few minutes, you're more than welcome to.
Too late.
It's too late. Okay, 949-330-7761. You can check out also the Rad Life on Facebook. We have our own page, and some more information there about how you can listen to the show and how you can call in. I'd love to hear from you. Let me know what you think about this open mic. But here's the question, okay? And I don't think there's a right or wrong answer, and I can make a case for either side.
Yeah.
Okay? In our own head, individually, do we look at the world around us as an R or as an is? That's the question. Thank you guys for joining me today. I appreciate you being on. I know a lot of people stuck it out on this live feed. We're working on a little bit more video on YouTube as well, but I appreciate it. I mean it. I'm sending you guys a lot of love. And I know it was a whole bunch of friends that were there, and I want to just give a shout-out to everybody. Scotty just said, hold on, the possibility of a mass-scale civil war is much more unlikely in this day of America. People in this day and age have too much of an individualized perspective of life to arbitrarily jump on the bandwagon.
I hope he's right, but Rick Perry kidded a few years ago, not that long ago, that maybe Texas would secede if they didn't get their way. And I thought, isn't that what started a war 100 years ago?
Well, you know what? Scott wrote a song called Adorable. And I'm going to leave us. I'm going to just basically sign off with that comment. That I hope you're right, Scott. We both do here. And you guys just let me know about: are you an is? Are we an is? Mm-hmm. Are we an R?
Right.
See you guys next week.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos. Brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.